Okay, Karen, you got a favorite war? You know, like Syria, Ukraine, Yemen, North Korea, Russia, China, Libya. I mean,
we could start with Syria and then go from there, I guess.
Yeah, this is, I had on in the first hour Catholic worker movement in New York that were fasting, protesting Yemeni children dying. And, of course, their solution is capitalism must be done away with and so on. But
Really?
Yeah, there's a government solution for everybody. You know, it's, and I'm going, God, they're the ones in the way. Haven't you been, like, ticketed for feeding the homeless or something? I mean...
Yeah, really.
You know,
no kidding.
I'm just... All right, we're getting into, you know, chicken hawk season starting again. You know, I want to talk...
That's right.
Talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about that real quick, then we'll get to it. All right, here we go.
Okay,
and now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Fear, I tell you, another unfeared individual, Karen Katowski, Lieutenant Colonel, retired from the Air Force in the Pentagon, working with the Chicken Hawks. You know, when does Chicken Hawk season start? Or most recent over at Lou Rockwell. And she's been through this before. Now, here they come. We're going to go get some for whom? You know, for what? Why? Help me out, Karen. You know, Chicken Hawk season. You know, they're coming back. They're going to go get some. What are they going to go get and for what and why?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, they are predictable. You know, they love war.
So who's they? What are we talking about? Who are we talking about?
Chicken hawks.
Chicken hawks. What's a chicken hawk? What does that mean? Where does that come from?
What's a chicken hawk? Well, you know, there's the definition that I use is basically people that want to send your son and my son and daughters into wars so that they can profit politically and other ways. These are people who have a fantasy about the world that governments can shape it in the way that they want, and they're part of that government. They love to use government to satisfy their needs, and in particular using war, because to them war is very attractive. It's quick. Enemies can be killed, emotions can be both created and then actions suppressed. I mean, you know, during a war, free speech dies. You know, this is a beautiful thing to chicken hawks. They love war, but of course they never fight war. They never participate. Their sons and daughters don't participate. That's the core definition of a chicken hawk. Now, chicken hawks have existed throughout human history. You know, there's people that want to use other people to satisfy their desires and needs and wants, particularly with government involved, with government force involved. But in this day and age, we have neoconservatives. These are the people that have been advocating for U.S. undeclared wars for 40, 50 years now. You know, I mean, if you think about the Iran-Contra, war in Central America, activities the CIA was doing in Central and South America even before that, These are neoconservative visions put in play. So,
well, what they did with Trump, it kind of, did he switch? Was he always supportive? Or did he switch while in office? Did it get explained to him? What?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is very disappointing for people that believed in Trump's America First, non-interventionist foreign policy. I mean, initially, Trump used some of Rand Paul's kinds of ideas about how our foreign policy should be. how we should use our military. But very quickly, Trump has some vulnerabilities in his who he is. You know, he surrounded himself with generals with many ribbons and badges and medals on their chest. He surrounded himself with people like that. And that was a first sign that his judgment was off when it comes to the role of a military, constitutional limits on government, particularly in terms of making war. And he brought those people around him because he trusted them. He thought they would be outsiders like him, and he didn't understand that these military generals are not outsiders, okay? Not at all. They are very much part and parcel to our foreign policy, that they've made their bones in these non-declared wars. They make their money by, you know, the weapons and the wars and the weapons manufacturers that they work in after they served in the military. So he didn't understand this, and he surrounded himself with the wrong people. Now, that's one part of it. That's like step one. But step two's already happened, and that the neocons have wrapped their tentacles around our government arms and decision-making. So that's a big problem. I don't know how we're going to solve that problem.
You know, there's this Jared Kushner, son-in-law, Ivanka cries and they bomb Syria. And you scratch the surface on Jared and it goes like, no people removed the Soros. Did you hear this?
Yeah.
You know what's going on?
I haven't heard the connection to Soros, but
Jared
Kushner.
Real quick to get you up to speed. He started a real estate financing kind of venture capital invest in real estate thing, of which George Soros immediately put in gazillions of millions of dollars. You know,
so really
so. Jared and his brother Jordan or Jason, whatever it is, he has a brother. So both of them are in this real estate venture that's heavily funded by Soros. So you didn't even have to go like two removed.
Wow. That's insane.
So I'm like, wow, this is it. So it doesn't fall far from. And of course, they're being Jewish gives them. Kushner and Ivanka converted, you know, gives them cred and somewhere. So I'm just going, anybody that was supportive of Trump before for these very reasons, he's done a 180 from what he was saying. I'm wondering why people would support. What's he doing that's.
It's pretty crazy. Also, it's funny that this didn't come out on either the real news, fake news, or in-between news when the anti-Clinton factor was blaming, you know, was connecting with Soros. We didn't hear, nobody reported this Soros investment in the Trump side of things.
It gets reported, but I mean, it doesn't have legs, you know.
Not a big deal. Yeah, it doesn't have legs.
You know?
And also, no one really could have forecasted that Kushner, his son-in-law, would have a big role in the White House. You know, his daughter, he's known to be close to, so you'd figure she'd be there somewhere. But for Jared to have a role that he apparently has, I don't know. I didn't see that coming, which shows you how ignorant I was of how this works. I mean, I'm pretty cynical, but not cynical enough.
I know, but I was. I'm like, you're still voting. We're still doing the Trump report. We'll do it tomorrow. And I'm just like, God. And he's, you know, Dr. Tamburi, he's all in it, but he's not happy anymore. And here's the article. George Soros backed Jared Kushner venture Cadre. It's called Cadre with $250 million. It turns out that George Soros is the money behind a new real estate venture called Cadre, which was founded by Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his brother, Joshua Kushner. The real deal has uncovered the fact that George Soros is the man who provided Cadre with a $259 million line of credit. A source told Soros has had a long, productive relationship with the Kushner family. So I'm feeling all kinds of better now.
Wow. When was this reported?
What's the date on this? It was fairly recently. Let's see.
Oh, okay. I totally didn't see anything, you know, like that. I didn't see a lot of reporting like that.
This is the end of January.
End of January, yeah.
I mean, so it's not like brand new, but I mean, it's
But it's after the election, though.
Yeah. And you're wondering how that didn't see. So it's always, you may choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B. We don't care because we control both, and this is who was controlling.
Yes. Well, that fits in totally. Yeah. Fits in totally well. And it's clear. I mean, he ran a campaign to appeal to voters that hadn't voted in a long time. So, you know, he did some things very correct to get elected with a kind of a populist, mandate, which was good campaigning. I mean, that's what has to be done. You have to do that because people weren't showing up to vote. But,
even if it was, you know, not even with the new people, he may not have won, but it was still easy 40% of people supporting whatever it was he's saying.
Uncovering the secrets. Absolutely. And exposing
got it.
Yeah, when we come back, I want to read this one paragraph from your article. In a world where ideas and people and products are freely exchanged, judged, and debated, the ideological message of the chicken hawks would never be competitive. Even in our unfree world, with government media jamming 24/7 through political parties and special interest advocacy, this message is still not well liked by most Americans. See, this, you know, this point that you're making here is what I was trying to tell these couple of people that I had on the first hour. They're well, we got to fix the government. We got to change government. I'm going. God, they're the ones doing it. I'm. You keep empowering the beast that's devouring you, and you don't even see it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I try and spike these guys. I mean, it's actually somebody, you know, on the street doing something, but their advocacy is we should just take all of Trump's money and redistribute it as if that was going to do something, you know?
Yes. But you know what it is it's the appeal of force. All these people, even these activists who, Catholic workers, you know, they're religiously oriented. They're humble. They have humility. They just were trying to do a good thing. But in fact, what they want is the use of force to be brought to impact the desired vision that they have for the world. They would love that. And it's in that way, they're no different than the neoconservatives. You know, they expect that they will take the arms of government and they will force everybody to do, you know, what they think they should do. When in fact, the market is what should be leading us. The market is the only solution. And you know, a great example of, you know, the difference between the market and the force is United Airlines fiasco.
Yeah.
You know, taking that guy off the airplane. I mean, all they had to do was keep raising the bidding. I bet they wouldn't have got to $1,000. They wouldn't have got to $1,200, and they would have had six or seven people wanting that $1,200. But they wouldn't do it. They stopped at $800. They said, okay, that's it.
I saw something that, we're going to have to get the government to allow them to increase the incentive, that it was capped. It was limited in some way.
Oh, my God. They said the government limits them. Then they're not a private company.
Right. You know, so what do you call that? United Airline Bump Compensation Limit. I just want to know if there's a limit.
Yeah.
See, yeah, airlines like United can underpay bump passengers because of a lengthy delay or one fare with a maximum cap of $13.50. Will have no choice but to offer market-based. Okay, so I guess there is a cap, which is, you know, there's your problem right there, you know. And
is there? But the cap's not what they went to. If the cap is
just the fact that there's a cap, you know. Because give me enough money if we're leaving New Jersey or something. You know what I mean? So I'm just
You need to have freedom to run your business, but we don't have freedom to run any business. We don't. My husband just finished his taxes. You know, like on the last day, like he always does, and we have a farm. I mean, you know, a little farm, a little talk small farm, but he itemizes and. He uses TurboTax, and it helps him go through all the questions. But it takes days for him to do it. And I don't do the taxes, but I looked over his shoulder. I read some numbers to him. And the kinds of questions that the government, via the IRS, demands to know about everything that you do and why you did it. I mean, that's just one little agency. Well,
yeah.
It's not little.
All right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
Get to be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
You know, this is one thing Karen Katowski, retired Lieutenant Colonel Air Force, you know, all these chicken hawks are going to do some war and stuff. You know, it's philosophy. It's just, you know, there's a lot of things. A lot of people we overlap with our desired goals, but it's how to get there. And we were talking about off air, the United Airlines thing. And I'm going, you know, I think there's a limit. I'm looking through here and, yep, sure it says. But the Department of Transportation has adopted a rule that encourages involuntary bumping, which is undoubtedly less popular with flyers than voluntary bumping. The regulation specifies that if a passenger is involuntarily bumped, airlines have to pay a penalty amounting to 200% to 400%, depending on the delay length of the one-way fare that they paid, with a maximum cap of $1,350. So this is... United was offered, they said, we offered $1,000, others said it was $800, but it doesn't matter. They do whatever. They've been a hell of a lot less of a hassle for them just to, you know, give the guy a couple of $1,000s, but there is a government restriction on how much.
Yes.
And I'm going,
yes.
Well, there's your problem.
What? Well, and you know what else? It's very likely, now that you've read that, that United Airlines and the other airlines lobbied for that particular restriction.
Yep. Or at least allow them to care.
That's right. Well, they probably asked for it. Most of these big major industries write their own code. They write their own law, and Congress just passes it. Congress just, you know, takes this written stuff. I mean, this is how foreign policy is made. You think Congress people know anything about foreign policy? They know anything about acquisition of DOD, you know, materials and design? No. We write that for them. Okay, most of the big government bureaucracies write their own law and send it. That's why we have congressional liaison officers in the Pentagon that monitor and work with and actually sit with the various people that are sitting on the Armed Services Committees and the Intel Committees and the other committees that we're interested in the Pentagon. So we write our own code, our own law, and the major corporations do the same. I wouldn't be surprised if the airline industry solicited that limitation, thinking that it would save them money, and now United Airlines stock has lost, you know, millions and millions of dollars, and they're going to be sued big time, and they're going to lose. That lawsuit's going to cost in public perception and in actual retribution money that they'll have to pay this poor guy.
Oh, you know what would be awesome?
The fact that they libeled him afterwards, the fact that they put out bad information about the guy afterwards, like, oh, this guy is a really lousy guy, so he deserves to be beat up.
And he's Asian. Damn it.
Damn,
might as well just call them, you know, some Asian, you know, derogatory of, you know, some whatever the heck, you know. And oh, this is what was awesome. He was one of the refugees from Vietnam in one of the boat guys.
You're kidding.
Yeah,
oh, no. He was a spokesperson. Oh, my God.
So he left Vietnam, and he gets a quote, and he says, you know, as I was fleeing Vietnam and out in the ocean, the way I'm doing that, I didn't feel as bad as I did on the plane of United.
Wow.
Blah, blah, blah.
I'm telling you, he's gonna clean their clock financially, and all for a couple $100 for a limit that the government shouldn't have put on, that the industry's probably asked for, but the government has no business, you know, regulating these kinds of things, regulating business down to these details. And it always has a bad impact. And now you've just brought us back to our foreign policy. These problems. We create it with our policy, and then we go bomb it in trying to correct it with our policy.
Yeah. Look,
we gave the chemical weapons that ISIS and other people that we've been working with have. They got them through their friends like Yemen and Saudi Arabia and Qatar and other places that are our allies too. Okay.
I need you to hold the microphone.
Karen,
I need you to hold your microphone in one place next to you. Because, man, you're going all over the place. I know you're excited there, but I need your mouth.
Is this better?
Oh,
thank you. Is this better? I don't know if it is.
Thank you.
Okay. But I mean, we, you know, we've created these problems, and then government, and you mentioned this already, government then provides the solution for problems that were created by government. So instead of thinking straight and figuring out how do we stop this problem that keeps recycling itself.
Let's bring it back to Syria because, you know, this is something that came up a few years ago. It was the same thing. It was sarin gas. They did the gas your people. If you gas your people, or we say you gas your people, we get a free, we get a freebie. Okay. Well, they, the people went, you know, 50-50. It went no and hell no. So it was not, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture, and they didn't get Obama to just do it. Well, Trump is like, hey, man, I give authorization to my peoples out there to go kick ass, and, you know, I want to see it on CNN make me look good. Well, now they go, okay. So they get a big giant bomb they do in the caves in Afghanistan, the theater commander make that decision. Then you have, and you knew that was coming, it gives the CIA the ability, you need more strikes. Yeah, help Saudi Arabia go drone a bunch more babies and body parts all over the walls of whatever. And then you have Syria. Now, the Syrian thing, whether it was a false flag or not or whatever, let's go from here. What are the missiles that went in that airport? I mean, did we need 60 missiles or 59 or whatever missiles to do that? To do what? Send a message? There was something.
No, we needed to get rid of 60 missiles so we could order a new batch of 120.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what we do with our weapons. And the Moab, it's interesting how they dropped the Moab. We haven't used it, except, you know, we've tested with it, but we've never actually used it until the other day when he dropped it on apparently CIA caves that were built, you know, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, we create a problem and we solve it with more destruction and more expense. And the thing is, the expense for all these weapons that we're wasting for stupid things that we've probably started, whether it's false flag or just our bad policy, this costs money, and this money isn't paid for by people in government. They're actually profiting from it. The money is paid for through taxes and future debt, current debt, but future debt that will be turned into inflation and taxes, both on our children and grandchildren. So, you know, this is extremely stupid policy for this country. And of course, we have no control over it. I mean, the people that, wanted to build a wall and they voted for Trump because he's going to build a wall. Well, what is he really saying? He's saying, well, I'm going to take care of America. And he even said America first. He wanted to not build bridges in Iraq and Syria. He wanted to build them here. Okay. People like that concept. They say, yeah, because I'm paying for that anyway. They kind of have this vague recognition that they're paying for it. And we say, hey, yeah, I want to pay for it here, not there. And, so he was onto something, of course, but totally. Yeah, government is in the business of blowing your money and justifying its existence, done extremely well.
Do you remember the movie The Mouse That Roared with Peter Sellers?
I remember the movie title, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, The Mouse That Roared. I haven't seen it in decades, but it just reminded me. It was a small European kingdom with a little castle, and they were broke. So they declared war on the United States. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, we need war reparations. We need a Marshall Plan. We need, we're going to declare war on the United States, and then they'll take care of us. Well, I'm thinking, wow, does Missouri need to declare war on the United States so they can bomb their bridges and get new ones?
Yeah. Good idea.
See?
Good idea. Know? Well, maybe need to do something like that. Maybe not to get reparations, maybe to get freedom.
Yeah, I'm just, it's so crazy. We're going to try and understand it. Karen Katowski is going to help. I'm going to come back with a paragraph from her most recent article that you can tell she gets it and what the solution might be. We'll be right back. NATO's weapon of choice, transatlantic banking powers. You know, Sibel Edmonds has this on Newsbud. Oh, yeah, newsbud.com. Sibel Edmonds has come out swinging on, man. She's just going to... She thinks, she's had her fill of trying to fix it on the inside thing,
Oh.
So
who is this again?
Sibel Edmonds.
Sibel. Oh, good. Yes.
I think she's finally, threw in the towel on we're going to, get good congressmen and government or something.
Good. Well, that's smarter. Yeah. She's a smart lady.
Well, it's about time. I've been on her bum. Seriously? You think you're going to fix it, that way from the other? No.
Yeah.
We're nearing the launching of our pirate party thing. We got the name. I didn't like, you know, the part. I mean, a party kind of stuff, but that was a placeholder. So we got the name. Here we go. It's pirates mm-hmm. without piratewithoutborders.com.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
So you go there
cool.
and
yeah.
you see all the, you know, tech and everything that we're kind of just advocating decentralization. You know, that's the whole thing. And it's yeah, the T-shirts and the pins are coming, and it's just the whole
oh,
point
good.
Is just make it fun. Oh, you'll like this. We have Hyperloop, you know, Elon Musk, you know, train whatever thing.
Yeah.
They have a team here at Arizona State University, and Emory Riddle and UA and so on. All the universities here have come together, and they got a 100 and whatever person team that's designed, and they are one of the last couple of dozen that are competing. So they'll compete in August at the end of the summer. Well, they're building, you know, this thing, and they're seeing the precariat, you know, our project. Well, the aerospace guy, a lot of these guys are graduating, you know, this year. The other guys, you know, the juniors and so on, we need another project. We're aerospace engineering. We need to engineer something. I go, well, there's the precariat. Build it. So we got shirts that build the ship, and they're all got. And we're going to get a 10x10 recruiting thing at the beginning in August when school starts. You know, and they start doing rush and everything
oh,
at
cool.
the university.
Yeah.
So we're going to get start at least here at Arizona State and try and work out through the summer other aerospace clubs around the country of collaborating on like a Reddit thing where one of the Hyperloop teams never even met until they got at the competition and they did it all
oh.
on Reddit. So we're going to
yeah, cool.
you know, set this up because it has everything. You know, structure, you know, structural engineers, aerospace, it's got rocket engines, it's got, mm-hmm. you know, airship that lighter than air of, you know, different materials and graphene, you know, carbon mm-hmm. nanotube and whatever.
Wow.
So
sounds really fascinating. Leading edge, yeah.
Yeah, so I think something for them to add to their portfolio. So they're already in. So I'm like, mm-hmm. So I just got to keep my finger on the button of this thing. Build the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just like, sayonara. Thanks for all the fish.
Yeah. Right. That sounds good.
All right. Well, we'll come back in half a minute here. I'll just come in reading this paragraph. We'll go from there.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
You know, I want to read a paragraph from Karen Kotowski in her most recent, you know, Waiting for the Chicken Hawks. In a world where ideas and people and products are freely exchanged, judged, and debated, the illogical message of the Chicken Hawks would never be competitive. Even in our unfree world with government media jamming it 24/7 through political parties and special interest advocacy, this message is still not well liked by most Americans. The people living in our country are probably the best informed population that has ever lived here, and we have lived our entire lives watching and often participating in the American political state's war, at home and abroad. Coming full circle in this cycle of state propaganda, we now educate ourselves and our children and friends personally, participating in the state's glorious smorgasbord selectively, taking what we like and walking on past the stale foreign policy and steaming police state offerings. We haven't left the building yet, but wise investors have already downgraded the restaurant from buy to hold. Well, what do you mean by that paragraph? Explain that for us, will you, Karen?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at polls on who wants war and how interested we are in, you know, engaging with troops on the ground, taking over, toppling foreign powers. If you look at popular support of the drug war, for example, all these things that our government does, they're not popular. We are told that these are all good for us. The media and the government harps on constantly. And our politicians vote for these things, but we don't like them. 80%, 90% of the population do not like these things. So we are ignoring them right now. We're passing them by. We don't like the police state. Nobody advocates for a police state. Nobody advocates for cops to have all power to do whatever they want and break the law and, you know, go into your place and shoot you and never have accountability. never get fired for any of the wrongdoing that they had happened. We don't like that. That is not popular. It's very clear that it's not popular. So we're at this place where the people, because we are informed, because we can seek out information that we're interested in and we have access to it, in spite of the fact that that the government would like to limit a lot of that information, we see what's out there. And of course, the good things that government does, people like that, like your previous guest. Oh, government can fix this. We'd like government to come in and help do something. Not kill people, of course, they say. Not kill people. But, of course, that's what it does best, is kill people. So, and destroy lives and take property and wealth. But, they don't want to do that. But they still have, they say, oh, government can do good things, and they like that. But they don't, they're not buying the wars. They're not buying the war on drugs domestically. They're not buying these undeclared wars overseas bombing of this.
We're being ruled wrong.
Oh, sure.
You're ruling us wrong. You're going to rule us. You're going to rule us right. I want to be ruled right.
That's right. That's right. And, and I think that was a big part of the appeal of Trump's message. He said, look, we're a wealthy country, but we don't spend our money here. And Americans go, oh, we definitely want to spend our money here. Now, granted, our money, there isn't much of it as much as the government would, as much as Trump would like us to believe and as much as we would like to believe. I mean, how many people are in denial in this country about the debt and the deficit and the unfunded obligations in the future? $240 trillion, there ain't that much money around. What's going to happen? But so many people are in huge denial of how that's going to get resolved. They think, oh, no, government will be, I'll get my Social Security. I have to. I paid into it. They kept it for me. Well, logically, they know that's not the case. But we still haven't come to a rejecting of that because we see that as something that actually benefits actual Americans, and we're invested in it, in that thought process. But, we're rejecting the wars. It has been for a long time. I mean, if you think back, and I missed it. I was just a kid, but the Vietnam War protests, a lot of those same people, are now up in years. And yet that message, they see it as something that was important and needs to be applied again. In their heart of hearts, they understand, what our country, what our government has become. And, of course, the fact that our government doesn't listen to us, how many congressmen up there, how many politicians speak for peace? There's like five. the rest of them are afraid to.
Yeah,
they're afraid to call out John McCain.
Well, why? I mean, there's the ones that do is like, okay, we have our token peaceniks out here, and they're, we like Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich leave, and they were replaced with what? I mean, I'm not seeing this real anti-war.
We've seen little bits and pieces of how the media operates, and it's not free media. The mainstream media is the government media. It's state media. And the state media, when it talks to people it talks to people who promote war. There's an overabundance of neoconservative spokespeople in media, both the people they interview and the people who interview them. But when they occasionally get a truth teller, They go crazy. They don't know how to react. They basically have to shut them down and they don't invite them back. So we are being, the government itself is trying to control this message that is a peaceful message, a non-interventionist message. We're at the point where...
Well, I saw a congressman, he gets up on, CNN, and he was going, the Syrian gap, we not really sure it wasn't, he didn't say false flag, but we're still investigating.
Right.
It's kind of, are you saying that you don't believe what they, they really were, pressuring
they
them
jump
on
all over them, yep. Well, that's because that's the marching orders that they have received. I mean, they are state media. I think that's part of, it's like the food you eat, right? I mean, we didn't care anything about GMOs or corn syrup or, this or that. But as over time, people have become aware, health kick, whatever, people have become aware of what's in their food. And, of course, the market is slowly responding to that by trying to say, oh, we don't have that. We don't have GMOs. You can eat us. We're good. We don't have this or that. We're all healthy. And some of that's true. Some of it's not true. But the thing is, people were asking the right questions. And so the marketplace responded. With government, people are asking the right questions. But it's, the response is much slower. So what's happening is, we are just bypassing those offerings. People aren't following. They're not paying that close attention to ISIS. What is ISIS? And how the heck did we bomb ISIS with the Moab in Afghanistan when ISIS stands for Iraq and Syria. Come on, seriously. But nobody questioned that. The media just pumped it right out.
Yeah, you know? No, we got a big bomb, man. You want to see the bomb? Look at the bomb. We got a cool bomb.
Yeah, and it hit ISIS, because ISIS is all you all stupid, dumb Americans know about what we're doing. We're bombing ISIS. So wherever we drop a bomb, must be ISIS underneath it. You know, that simplicity, that basically lies that were put out about how we're conducting our foreign policy, that's actually the government responding to the fact that we're not very interested as Americans. We're passing up those plates. Those dishes are not attractive to us. They don't look very appetizing. So we're passing them by. We're choosing other things like, hey, fix our health care, you know, make sure I get my Social Security. Those are things that are tasty to me, but not these other things. And so it's a step in the proper evolution of where we have to go as a country.
Which is what?
We'll be forced to go. Well, I think you know where. Look.
It's economic.
The government has to collapse. It will collapse, and it'll take a lot of us with it when it does, and the country will break up. The United States is not a cohesive nation in any case. It's an empire. Empires constantly fall apart. They break down. It takes time. Ours will follow that exact same. And look, this is not new. I remember when I was a kid reading about the Roman Empire, and they said, well, my goodness, you know, the United States is an empire just like the Roman Empire. I wonder if we've only got 300 years. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, we're moving on that.
Take a zero off of that, and that's about where we're going.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's right. So this will happen, and people disengaging from the state bad act is a beginning of the collapse of an empire, and that's all we're doing. People, we're disengaging. Ask anybody what our foreign policy is in Syria. No one knows.
Hell,
ask what it is in Yemen.
Does
they
Trump
don't even know,
know
we're in Yemen or Somalia.
Well, do they know?
No, they don't. It's really just...
No, I mean the administration. These guys, no, they didn't explain it to me. We haven't even talked about Somalia yet.
Well,
we're starting to go back into Somalia.
Well, the neoconservatives understand what they're doing. It's a destabilization operation regionally in order to prop up Israel, because Israel's going the same damn way that we are. You know, it's not a sustainable
Silver Alliance.
Okay, let me turn that off. All right, break, 4 minutes. Now, the one thing that I did want to get in, at least in the archive, is Yemen. You know, you look and you scratch the surface and you see and so on. And the Catholic worker guys, they were put it pretty short. They go, well, I go, why? Somebody explain it to me. Well, they had the Houthi or whatever group of we don't like the House of Saud. And that guy that was in charge of Yemen got ousted, and he came back with his, you know, resistance, and they go, nuh-uh. So they're going to squash the living crap out of everybody in Yemen just to make sure he's not in charge. I don't know.
Right. And I think that guy was wasn't that guy our ally at one time?
Of course, they're always our allies at one time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is, and it's not just about that either. I mean, it's also about propping up the price of oil. You know, gas went up 20 cents overnight, so that was, you know, that's part of what it is that they're doing. When there's uncertainty in that significant source of fuel, which in fact doesn't impact us in real terms of supply, because we're getting very little from our oil, but the world gets oil from there. And it's all about priming the money pump for people.
Well,
that,
even though we don't, we have
position for that
enough our own resources that we can, you know, be a net exporter, but. Is there some deal that we got with Saudi Arabia just for them to keep it on the petrodollars? Incentive is helping.
That's exactly right. You know. That's exactly right. And really, what collapses empires is somewhat, you know, a trickling away or a shifting away from various resources that once made them wealthy, you know, as things change or they run out. But it's really the money management. It's really the fake money that... you know, the money that is, you know, the overborrowing, the chipping of the coins, you know, it's the people lose their faith in the coin of the realm. We're moving in that direction very rapidly, much more rapidly even than
you get kind of dark here at the end of your article. I mean, it's my neighbor periodically clears out the birds that mess with his poultry house with some buckshot. Every day, in every way, we should adopt such vigilance. It's always chicken hawk season, and we have every right to protect ourselves, our property, and our country from their screeching and their contaminated droppings. That's
sure.
That's you're a nice way of saying they need to be gone.
Well, they do, and again, he doesn't kill many birds, but he scares them away. He does not tolerate them, and that's what we need. We need to not tolerate them. But of course, how are we going to stop it? You know, the biggest branch is the executive branch with all of those bureaucracies of the DOD, the intelligence. That all works for the president. You know, it's massive. It's massive. You know, the budget is supposed to be put together by Congress, but no, it doesn't. You know, the bureaucracy, the executive branch presents a budget. This is what we need to operate. You add to it.
That's
what this Congress does. I mean, we have almost a totalitarian system.
Well, it came into place with FDR. I mean, you know, a lot of it, you can see it was just, I mean,
well,
the
Lincoln,
argument.
Lincoln, too.
Yeah,
Lincoln
no, they
too.
They I all, mean, every, I mean, it's been a progression.
They all have, but no, FDR, yeah, was huge.
Well, it was the reason I say FDR is because there was enough documented, you could see a real political opposition by people and corporations and whatever. But it's when you get corporations involved, the second we start having this crown-granted monopoly protect industry of competition crap, you know, as soon as you did that, it was done. You know, I mean, what did you think
and
was
going to
happen?
You know, the trains, when we
back.
Went west, FM. I mean, in the late 1800s, the same thing.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
Industry, if they
and
can
those
rent
that
seats,
just
they
won't
will.
Leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Retired Lieutenant Colonel out of the Pentagon, explaining it to us, and I need some splaining. And some Dire Straits. Okay. The one thing that I'm hoping that we can share with the audience is, real quick, if we can walk down where we're at around the world in the foreign policy. And you were, before you left, you were interested in North Africa. I mean, you had African, and now we got slaves openly traded in Libya again. So I'm like going,
wow,
you know, I would fix that one, you know. So if you could walk us through the gate seven country kind of thing, we're like on track. We're going back into Somalia. We got troops in Somalia now.
Yep.
So I'm going, walk us through what's going on.
Well, I, you know, it's a continuation, really, of a document that's been around for 15, 16 years now, the plan, I forget the name of the document now, but it was a proposal for put together in a Jewish-American think tank, neoconservative think tank, not that that's Jewish, but in this case, it was definitely a pro the government of Israel, and they had a plan for U.S. foreign policy, which included destabilization of basically every neighbor of Israel's in the region. And this would also include an expansion of Israel proper, of Israel's control, territories, and resources, because Israel's a small, this little country, small, and it doesn't have a huge amount of resources. It has a tiny bit of gas under the water, you know, that kind of thing. But doesn't control water, doesn't have huge agricultural areas, certainly could use some more natural resources. And This plan included their enemies, and those were listed in the seven countries that I think Wesley Clark made the mistake of publicly talking about and in mainstream media about 8 years ago, still same. And Somalia is, I think, in that group. You know, so those countries, those Middle East countries, that's part of a really, actually, I don't see it as part of a global policy. I see it as a regional policy, which is desired by a couple of countries. The United States and Israel are two that desire it. And the United States has the ability to act to destabilize these countries. And so, you know, if they're slave trading in Libya, what does that tell you about investment money that might go into Libya? Is that going to shrink the market a little bit for investment in Libya? Yeah, it might. It might, unless you were the one that put it there, unless you were the one that created that chaos, and then you're in first. So, yeah, there is a business connection, a government-state connection. So that's that. Now, we also have the larger problem globally. Are we going to have World War III against Russia, against China? Are we going to blow North Korea off the map? Are we going to mess with the South China Sea and get into it with China over that? You know, what are we going to do there? Well, you know, these kinds of larger, I think, foreign policy things are, again, money-driven, but it's more finance. You know, it's more central bank-driven. We have got to keep killing, murdering, and disrupting, or the music stops and we aren't left without a chair. So, you know.
You think we can
this
just
is how the government views it.
You just war our way into prosperity or distraction?
No,
from
no,
the
not prosperity. No. War doesn't bring prosperity.
No, I mean, what are they arguing? I mean, why is it just kicking
survival.
The can or something?
Look,
I mean, what?
What happens when your country's at war? You shut down domestic dissent. You control the activities and the production, most specifically the production of all of your citizens and people that live in your country. War is the health of the state. It is how the state best extracts. And if you think back to the rationing that went on until even after World War II ended in this country, most people, you know, we weren't around then, we don't remember that. That kind of rationing is total fascism. It's government control of the means of production and management of consumption by dictate. This is what we did. This is what war allows governments to do. And the ratchet effect is they never go back to the previous level. They always maintain some of that power. So you have to look at, you know, our foreign policy in the context of a dying empire. We're behaving very much as dying, desperate empires behave. And we have this massive arsenal. And the military is very rightfully concerned about losing their budget. Of course, Trump tried to calm them down, saying, I'm going to increase your budget. But they know good and well the best way for them to increase their budget is to say, we just dropped a bunch of bombs and we got a bunch more to drop. You've got to give us money to do that.
This was interesting when
fearful and quieted down, you know, so the people can't really talk or react or do anything.
Well, Trump, when he did the I'm going to give power back, more autonomy to the CIA for drone strikes in Yemen and wherever. And the Pentagon, I'm going to give theater commanders more. Don't be bothering me with the details. And they go, boom, big bomb in Afghanistan. Problem solved. Thank you very much, Mr. Mm-hmm. President. Now we're going to wage war and kick ass. So I'm going, it's kind of like he just took a side. He goes, I'm washing my hands of it. You know, let me know how it works out. You know,
well, the only possible of potential hope in this is that he's treating it like a business. He's saying, look, you now have the responsibility and the authority, which is a great business concept. We all know it. We all heard it. And then when they screw up by, you know, killing the wrong people or bad publicity or whatever they do, he will, you know, change course. We can only hope that his unpredictability will include the possibility that he will change course when he realizes how stupid his commanders are and how politicized the arms of government have become when it comes to this. I mean, they are out for their own agendas in many cases. I mean, you can't, you know, what agenda does Trump have? He wanted to control immigration and he wanted to get rid of the terrorist threat of ISIS. Well, in theory, that's not a big project. That's not a global project of wars with great powers. That's not what that is. And that's certainly not why he was elected. So if he's true to what if he was telling the truth then, and his business history is kind of, you know, leading him to decentralize the power, give people the responsibility and the authority to do what they have to do. If they make mistakes, which they have clearly from day one, and when they do things that are in violation of the Constitution and embarrassing to this country and harmful to this country, which they are, all those things that happen, that maybe he'll, you know, he will fire them. And he's got a long way to fire, though. He'll have to fire all the way down to the lieutenant.
Well, the thing on this, what was the count? His Security Advisory National Council of Foreign, whatever the heck it was, and Steve Bannon's gone. And then they, not that I'm a fan of any of these guys, but it was obvious that You know, if you weren't with the program and we're going to go kick ass somewhere, man, you're off the board.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That has to be
it's
a
not
Trump
clear.
Thing.
Well, it could have been a Trump thing, but it also could have been, you know, they were gunning for Bannon. Any outsider that would question some of the stuff that these insiders are advocating is gone. They're getting rid of them. And this is not done by the Republicans and the Democrats. This is done by the you know, the interest in Washington. So,
well, what influence? You know, I don't feel a lot of swamp draining here, you know?
No, there's no swamp draining. And I think Trump is going to have to either go back on that and admit that he's not draining the swamp or rediscover, you know, that, or else he's going to have a really, uncomfortable time. But again, he will be a happy man if he pleases Washington, and he's doing that. He's creating wars. He's continuing with the expanded Israel agenda, you know, to destabilize those countries and to put them in a position of manipulation and control by Israel, which, of course, you know, is us and Israel and our allies. He's doing that. He's beefing up the military for great wars, which they love. They eat those great wars up, World War III. Revitalizing the atomic weapons in case we have to go, you know, nuclear. He's pleasing many sectors in Washington. And this is bad. Yeah, this is dangerous that he's doing that.
Well,
I really don't know.
Well, what do you think? We haven't even talked about, you know, North Korea and China. And do you think, you know, China and Russia are looking at Trump going, this guy's out of his depth, man. I don't think he really gets what's...
Well, one thing that you can be sure that they're doing is they know a great deal more about how and why Trump is behaving than we do. You can be sure that China and Russia has really good political intelligence and straight-out intelligence on our leaders, much as we tried to understand those leaders when they were under communism in China and Russia. But I think technology has changed where their intel is at least as good, if not way better, than ours ever was. So we are now in the position of having our former Cold War enemies watching us with the same concern and scrutiny and putting their best people to try to figure out who's influencing him and what he's going to do next. So at least they know. So I think they know way more about what Trump is doing and why than we do, than the American people know. And that, to me, is comforting.
Yeah,
of some of this.
Yeah, we're at the end of the show. I just let you finish your thought. But
oh, okay.
You know, the one that was why I brought that up, because I'm sitting here going, you know, Putin been around a long time. Guy KGB, he knows mm-hmm. and he knows.
Yes.
And he's going through it. Trump, you want to play, let's play and we'll talk. And President of China, and they got to be looking at him either he's – expressing he's got another agenda that they're understand or in supportive of, or they're got to look at him and go, man, you are in the middle of a storm. You have no idea what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, they're definitely trying, you know, they're trying to figure it out, and I think they have the means to do it.
Well, what do you think their conclusion is? That he's
well, I don't
a
know
puppet?
Yet. I don't honestly don't know. I think he trusted the wrong people. And he has, it's going to have to fire him. He's going to have to get rid of him. He's going to have to, go back to the things that made him popular in this country. People, you know, the Republicans, the Democrats, all the independents that voted for him are not going to stick with him if he doesn't deliver. And he cannot deliver domestic benefits without changing the foreign policy, as he promised he would. So he does have to get back to that, I think.
Well, this is
the Kushner connection is a problematic connection.
Yeah, no, I mean, you'd think that would be, you know, more. Well, the left didn't bring it up. Why? Because they're buds with Soros.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. So they got their man in the White House. We're all good, man. Yep. Shh, be quiet.
Yep.
You know.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. But it's almost like the House of Borgia. You know, I mean, there's all these connections and crimes that go on.
What you
and,
mean the Pope thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with he's got family, he's got friends, he's got people he trusts that are bad, people that he doesn't trust. It's a den and it's a power struggle. And I think we've seen some of the results of the power struggle with some of the people he let go and why he let them go. Some of it due to public pressure, some of it due to the fact that he lost faith in them. And ideally, that's what will happen. He's not stupid. He's not a stupid individual. I think he, you know, I do think he's going to figure out that he is being, you know, not served well by some of these folks. But again, you know, hard to say. Hard to say. I think the only thing that keeps him in there is they don't want Pence. Because Pence has a different way of operating. He's very much a neocon, I think, and he's very supportive of some
of
this
stuff.
Well,
they don't want Pence. Who doesn't want Pence?
I don't think the deep state wants Pence yet.
Really?
I mean, I don't think they have enough on Pence yet.
Really?
You know, a guy who thinks he's principled, that's the worst one.
Yeah.
You know, and Pence is a religious dude. Very, very principled, very thinks that he's, you know, he doesn't sit and have dinner with, you know, people that aren't his wife, which actually not a bad policy. You know, you don't want to be going out on dates with people. But you know, he took a lot of heat for that. But the thing is, he's rigid. He's a rigid person. He's a rule-based person. They don't really want that. They had trouble with Truman because he was kind of not so much principled, but Truman thought he had a way of doing things, you know, that he was going to do, he was going to follow. And that made him unliked in Washington. And I think Pence would fall into that same category. So I don't think they want Pence. With Trump, I think they can sell. They think they can sell him because they think they can. They're up to par with his salesmanship stuff. And he's still in the honeymoon period with these people. So you know, he's given them, I think, enough rope to hang themselves. But he didn't. You know, he obviously doesn't. He's probably out of his depth a little bit. You know, it's not clear to me. Now, again, you know, there were reports of what Trump thought about different things in the past decade. He was very interested in 9/11. You know, he was interested in listening to what some of the 9/11 groups had to say.
He's in construction. He
has shown some skepticism.
He knows.
What's that?
He's in construction, man. He knows.
Yes. And he does. And so he has been open to being a skeptic of government. Certainly, that was his key to his campaign. I'm a skeptic of government. I'm a skeptic of Hillary. Because why? Because look at what she's done. Can't trust these people. Okay, yeah. And that's very appealing, and that's part of what he ran on. So I think some of that is true, that he's a skeptic. But I think because he didn't serve, he has that little flaw about a lot of people who didn't serve. And they think, oh, I didn't serve, so I can't criticize a guy in uniform. Yes, you can. Just like if you don't vote, you can criticize your government.
You know, one thing I thought that he may have selected military people is because he liked the idea of being commander-in-chief, having them salute, yes, sir, take freaking orders. You've been trained your whole life for that, right? You know?
Well,
and he
thinks
that that would
happen.
Well, I don't know if that's it would be the experience.
I don't think that was it. I think he picked military people because he thought they weren't part of the political underground in D.C.
In
D.C.
they
were promoted on merit. He didn't realize they were political beasts,
yep,
just like the others. But he thought they weren't. So as they proved to be crooks, like Flynn and several of the others, you know, because he went through a few. Remember he met with Petraeus and didn't give him a job. He's met with a lot of them. He's starting to understand. I say give him 6 months. He may change a little bit.
See, everybody's
can't get rid of Kushner.
Yeah, everybody's hoping that.
How's he going to do that?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a next generation of Soros, man. You know,
we don't have any choice but to give him 6 months unless he gets whacked.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be stuck with Pence, unless they whack both of them, and then who knows who it'll be.
I got to get that Francis Boyle. He's next, and I got to get him on before
the
show starts.
Yeah, okay. Oh, have fun. Great talking to you.
Hey, thanks, Karen. It's always great catching up with you.
Yeah, it's a little bit depressing, but...
well, it's unwinding as we anticipated, so, you know.
Yes, that's true.
So we're prepared. Yep. You got a farm.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. I got a little bit of food. I might live for 6 months afterwards. You'll
right.
see.
Thanks,
okay,
Karen.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And now, live